I think there's a lot of issues around the testimony itself. You know, I think there's a lot of conflicting accounts, and there's a lack of real evidence or tangible evidence, so to speak. You know, that to place people in individual places where they say they are. I think also, you know, I mean, there's been issues around the defense strategy, which is sort of questioning the reliability of state witnesses. You know, rather than contesting the facts of the case, they're simply trying to discredit everyone through various strategies, including, you know, simply highlighting drug addiction and drug use and the like, which, I mean, is one strategy amongst many, but equally, you know, brings to the fore the idea that the concern around evidence itself and what evidence actually had to go on in this trial.
Yeah. It does seem as if a lot of the details are quite murky. I'm wondering what you then make of, you know, the evidence that has been presented thus far, and based on that, how strong or weak you think the case is?
Well, it's difficult to differentiate between the evidence itself and the concern that a lot of the accused have for being in the media spotlight. You know, I think a lot of these testimonies have come at a specific time, and they've sort of been launched on the public to generate more interest in the case. And, you know, it's becoming more and more hard to differentiate between the reality of the case and people's realities that they're presenting. So that's an ongoing concern. And I think, you know, that by virtue of the defense trying to discredit witnesses through their reliability and, you know, their credibility, that doesn't aid that concern, because, you know, they're talking about the accused. They're not really talking about the case itself.
Yeah. There's also been, I think, you know, just fascinating allegations that have been made, and jaw-dropping allegations that have been made, that I think it was by one of the state witness, in fact, that had essentially indicated or alleged that Kelly Smith, of course, Justin's mother, had allegedly sold her for 20,000 rand. And I think that really stood out for many people. But unfortunately, it does happen in South Africa, and South Africa is actually quite common and a quite common place for things like that to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, human trafficking is an ongoing concern in South Africa. I mean, the various forms of abductions that occur, you know, abductions for ransom, there may be sort of exploitation type abductions where kids are abducted for sexual concerns, whatever. And then there's also, you know, I mean, human trafficking itself, in which people are moved around for forced labor and the like. So, I mean, it's not uncommon in this country, of course, that the mother sold the child is, of course, quite jaw-dropping and not common at all. But, you know, I mean, the networks that exist for human trafficking to occur have long been established in this country and continue to exist.
Yeah, I think the fascinating part of this particular trial as well is that it's essentially happening within the community, although it's a high court trial. It's happening in the community, and essentially the community of the Saldanha Bay area have access to be present and witness the trial unfold, essentially. And we saw when Kelly was taken back to, you know, to her shack or to her home, you know, some of the abuse that she received from, you know, the community in and around where she had stayed. What has been sort of the overall response by the community, from what you can tell, to the trial, to some of the allegations that have been surfaced in the trial, and how's the community responding to it?
Well, I think on the one hand, there's a lot of anger within the community that this occurred in the community itself, was allowed to occur or did occur. And, you know, I mean, of course, that anger can be directed at individuals itself, but I think, you know, there's also a concern around the ease by which individuals and young children can go missing and be abducted and the like in what is quite a small, you know, town on the West Coast. So, you know, I think there's an ongoing anger there, not only with individuals, but also with government institutions. You know, I think SAPS has received quite a bit of heat about their ability to engage with this trial and engage with the evidence and, of course, investigate things as beforehand. So there's that concern. And then, of course, there's a fear. There's a concern around, you know, that this may happen to someone else or someone else's child. So, I mean, it is a very close-knit and small community at the end of the day, and you know, this is quite a big event for it to go through as a community over the course of a few days that it's occurred.
Yeah, and of course the media coverage has been extensive. There are a range of different live streams that are happening, that people literally from all over the world can follow this particular trial. How do you see, the media coverage of this particular trial? And, I mean, the search for Jocelyn and all of the conversations around that, how do you see that having an impact on the trial, if any?
Well, on the one hand, I mean, the media attention is good in the sense that it's bringing to light and bringing to the fore a lot of ongoing issues around, human trafficking and human trafficking networks in South Africa. So, I mean, for that instance, it is good that there is media attention on this issue and that it's bringing it to the public's attention. But on the other hand, I feel that, the media attention is driving the witnesses to create stories or to try to stay within the limelight, so to speak, if you could call it limelight, more than the actual concern with the trial itself. So I think on the one hand, it's advantageous to have it, and that it's putting on the putting in the national agenda what is an ongoing criminal concern. But on the other hand, it's also creating sort of dark stars out of the witnesses and the like, which is feeding into the trial itself and creating more and more fanciful ideas and stories about what has occurred.
Yeah. I'm wondering then if the allegations are proven and the three accused are convicted, what essentially the alleged crime says about, those three accused ultimately, and the state of mind that essentially, if it were to be proven, would lead a mother to literally sell a child for 20,000 rand?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, that's important to keep the idea that they are innocent until proven guilty. Should they be proven guilty upon what evidence, we can then use that as a means of understanding what their motives may have been. It's very easy to get emotionally involved in the case, but ultimately, I think we need to remain focused on what evidence exists, what evidence is being presented, and highlight the constitutional mandate that you are ultimately innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah. It's certainly disturbing some of what we've heard, and I think for many, the question then remains, where is Jocelyn?
Yeah, well, I mean, that is the big question, and I think, the evidence at the moment is not substantial enough to really determine in any significant way where the child is or the status of the child, and that is the big concern for me, is that the trial is becoming a trial in and of itself for itself rather than looking at the actual concern, and the actual concern is that there is a child missing here.
Yeah, does that impact on the potential outcome of the trial, whether or not she is found?
Well, yeah, I think it would. I mean, should she be found, I mean, that would be quite a revelation, and I think that would change things a little bit, because I mean, you'd ultimately have someone who can provide evidence of what actually happened. Presupposing that she was awake at the time, but that could fundamentally change things. But to be honest, I'm not sure that will happen in the next few days or months.